Let's turn in our Bibles to, excuse me, Matthew 16. We're going to look at verse 28. Matthew 16, 28. Matthew 16, verse 28. Assuredly, I say to you, there are some standing here who shall not taste death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Peter had just declared thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God, and he had made that proclamation by the power of the Spirit. Jesus said, flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but the Father who is in heaven. And then Jesus said, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. So Jesus is building his church. He continues to build his church, and his church is a unique program, different from what the prophets of the Old Testament had prophesied or proclaimed would come. The Old Testament prophets had proclaimed that a kingdom was coming whereby there would be no more war anymore. They would not train for war anymore. Kingdom would no longer rise up against kingdom, nor nation against nation. There would be no longer any sickness, no more disease. The animals would no longer eat each other. A total change that the prophets had proclaimed would come with the coming of the king. But in Matthew 16, Jesus makes it clear that there is a shift in the kingdom plan. Now, he says here in verse 28 that as Peter, James, and John were there, of course, at the they're listening to him along with some of the other disciples, but he specifically had those three in mind when he said, there are some standing here who shall not taste death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. And so then when we go to chapter 17, he explains what that is through the transfiguration that takes place at the what they call the Mount of Transfiguration. And we're going to get into that next week. But tonight, I want to clarify the topic concerning the kingdom, because there is a lot of confusion about what the kingdom is. And so we want to focus on that tonight. But before we do, I want to draw your attention to Ezekiel 33. Let's go to Ezekiel 33. And it will be up here as well on the PowerPoint, so you can see as we look at these verses that the prophets of old, in this case specifically Ezekiel, was called to be a watchman. And we read in Ezekiel 33, chapter 33, beginning in verse 1, the word of the Lord came to me, Ezekiel writes, son of man. He was often addressed as the son of man. Of course, he's human. He's in the flesh, son of man. Speak to your people and say to them, when I bring the sword against a land and the people of the land, choose one of their men and make him their watchman. So now he's giving them an example of what a watchman is. And the watchman, verse 3, sees the sword coming against the land and blows the trumpet to warn the people. Then if anyone hears a trumpet but does not heed the warning and the sword comes and takes their life, their blood shall be on their own head. Verse 5, since they heard the sound of the trumpet but did not heed the warning, their blood will be on their own head. And if they had heeded the warning, they would have saved themselves. So the watchman in those days would be often in a tower, and as he saw the enemy approaching, he then would give the warning to the people. Then the people would take action, and do something about it rather than nothing, so that they might be saved. And then verse 6, but if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet to warn the people, and the sword comes and takes someone's life, that person's life will be taken because of their sin, and I will hold the watchman accountable for their blood. We today are watchmen in the same sense that Ezekiel illustrates here in this story. And we are called to proclaim the coming of the kingdom that we see now quickly approaching. We read in Matthew 24, verse 14, when Jesus is discussing, he's answering the question that the disciples had back in verse 3, what will be the sign of the end of the age? And one of the signs is that kingdom shall rise up against kingdom and nation against nation. And things will wax worse and worse. There will be false prophets that will be raised up, it says in verse 11 and 12. And there will be many bad things, earthquakes in various places. It's not going to be a good scene. And in the midst of this, toward the end of the age, this gospel, it says in verse 14, Matthew 24, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. Now, for years, I used to confuse the gospel here with the gospel of salvation, the good news. The word gospel simply means good news. That's all it means. And I used to confuse this passage here in Matthew 24, 14 with the gospel of salvation. We think of course, John 3, 16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believe in him shall not perish but have eternal life. And that's the gospel. That's the good news of salvation. But then there is the gospel of the kingdom. What is that? The good news of the kingdom. You see, there are two kingdoms that concerns the gospel today. The first kingdom is the kingdom of this world. The second kingdom is the kingdom that is coming. That would be God's kingdom to replace the kingdom of this world. The kingdom of this world, Jesus called, he said that my kingdom is not of this world, in John 18, 36. The Old Testament prophets promised of a kingdom that was to come later. Jesus, in the meantime, commissioned his followers to be ambassadors to proclaim the salvation message, John 3, 16. We are to be ambassadors, 2 Corinthians 5, 18 to 20. You are to be ambassadors of reconciling the world back to God. And of course, the Great Commission, as we do so, we make disciples. But God's kingdom that is coming is good news that is to be preached as we get closer to the end, as we read in Matthew 24, 14. This gospel of the kingdom will be preached into all the world, and then the end will come. I would like to submit to you that God's kingdom is coming to planet Earth sooner than we think. And our commission, just like Ezekiel, is to tell the world, let them know that his kingdom is coming. You see, Jesus said, we are in this world, but we are not of this world. He made it very clear that his kingdom is not of this world. And yet we live as though, well, yeah, his kingdom is of this world, and we live as though he wants us to be part of the world, but we're not to be part of the world. We're to be separate from this world, this kingdom that is ruled by Satan. And we don't want to think about that. We don't want to think about the governments of this world actually bowing their knee to Satan as their king. But that is, in fact, what is taking place. In fact, we are told, written by David in 1000 BC, 3,000 years ago, in Psalm chapter 2, why do the nations rage and plot a vain thing as they take their stand against God the Father and his anointed, which is the Son? And that is exactly what is going on today. And yet we think that we can somehow change this world through politicians and through politics. It's not going to happen, as we see our country spiraling down further and further into the pit of rebellion against God. And so in the midst of this, we are called to be his watchmen, to preach the good news of the kingdom that is coming, the kingdom that the Old Testament prophets had spoken of so long ago, that has been put on hold. In meantime, we are in the church age, which is not of this world. That's why we're ambassadors. We're from another kingdom outside this world. My mother's there now. She's there running around in the streets made of transparent gold that the Lord is still working on, by the way. He told his disciples the night before he went, "In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. And I go there to prepare a place for you." And he's still working on it. And one day he's going to come back. He's going to take us all to be with him where he is. And then, when he does that, all hell will break loose on this earth. Why? Because there will no longer be salt and light through the body of Christ to preserve the society around them. And the son of perdition then will be released, the tyrant, who will come forth, and he will bring law and order to planet Earth by forcing everyone to follow his lead, taking a mark on the hand and on the forehead, or on the forehead, and even to worship him. This is where it's headed. We're not headed toward revival. We're headed toward more apostate teaching within the church. We're headed toward a time where we're going to see Christians, true believers that are rejected and spit upon, because they simply want to proclaim the gospel of the kingdom. The Old Testament prophecies are converging very quickly today, and yet we see the church asleep. I hate to be this way. I hate to talk like this, but it's the truth. As we watch the church as a whole, be it Roman Catholic, Orthodox, most Protestant denominations, even evangelicals, are looking to the world system to save the world. They're looking to systems and programs to save the world. They think by reaching out and caring for the sick and assisting the poor is going to somehow save the world. That couldn't be further from the truth. Especially as Jesus is pushed more and more back, aside, and out of the way. As the world paints a different Jesus, a different picture of Jesus, and shows him as something other than what the Gospels teach that he is. He came to save the world. Why? Because the world is in rebellion against God. And so there are these two kingdoms, and the kingdom of this world is at war with the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ. But there's coming a day when Jesus will come back and we with him. And according to Revelation 11:15, when the seventh trumpet is sounded, then the announcement is made, the kingdom of this world, under Satan's control, the kingdom of this world has become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. So we are watching the prophecies that the Old Testament prophets had proclaimed would take place just before Jesus would set up his kingdom here on earth. We're watching those prophecies converge and come quickly to pass. Just recently, we saw issues arise concerning the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action concerning the Iran nuclear agreement. It's called JCPOA. Every 6 months, the President of the United States recertifies this program, which is required according to the agreement. It's not a treaty, but an agreement that President Obama entered into. And May 12th looms just around the corner in whether Donald Trump, President Trump, will recertify it or not. And this is extremely significant because if he chooses to withdraw on May 12th from this agreement, then the sanctions against Iran will be restored. We read this about this agreement. This article was from Haaretz, May 4th, days after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gave a presentation arguing for the end of 2015 Iran nuclear deal. U.S. President Donald Trump has all but decided to withdraw on May 12th. It's as though it's a done deal. Now, why is this significant? Well, enter the prophecy concerning Russia, Iran, and Turkey. That with that pulling out of that agreement, Iran has threatened to restart their nuclear program and head in the direction of developing nuclear weapons. And the evidence of this, as well as a number of other factors, continues to mount, indicating that we are indeed in the latter years, in the latter days. In the very Ezekiel 38 passage in 39, we learn about the prophecy concerning Russia, concerning Iran and Turkey, that they will invade Israel in the latter years. We see this in Ezekiel 38, verse 8. In the latter years, you, referring to the leader of this coalition headed up by Gog, over the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshech, and Tubal, in the latter years, Ezekiel writes, will come into the land of those, that would be the Jews, brought back from the sword and gathered from many people and on the mountains of Israel. And you will come up against my people. See, God sees Israel as my people like a cloud to cover the land. And notice when it will take place. It will take place in the latter days. And so we see latter years and latter days right there in the text. And so what are the latter years and the latter days? Well, the latter days is a technical term. Latter days has to do with the events surrounding the coming of Messiah to establish his kingdom. It begins in Genesis 49. We read about the latter days, what will become of the sons of Jacob in the latter days, in verses 1 through 10. And in there we read that the scepter shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh comes, to whom all nations then will submit. And the word Shiloh is a reference to Messiah. And so We know that this will take place in the latter days. Can we have the air conditioning on, please? I see the fans going. And if you need a jacket, please put your jacket. And so the current events indicate that we are indeed in the latter days as we watch the stage being set, as we see the leader of Russia, who is over the land of Magog, and I'll go over that later to show you that indeed it is Russia, it's not Turkey. And that these prophecies, in fact, are converging. This is just one of a multitude of prophecies, but tonight I'm zeroing in on what's happening with Iran. Because what's happening, taking place right now, has, I believe, prophetic significance. And that's why I'm talking about it tonight. So, when we use the literal method of interpretation, we just read the text. The text identifies these three nations, Russia, Iran, and Turkey, as playing key roles in the latter days. How so? Ezekiel 38, verse 2 tells us, Son of man, set your face against Gog. Gog, who is over the land of Magog, and he's a prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal, and you are to prophesy against him. Now, this Gog is not a human flesh and blood human being, but is a spirit being, much like the prince of Persia and the prince of Greece that we read about in Daniel 10. You see, according to Deuteronomy 32:8 and also Genesis 10, the Lord divided up the world into regions. And he placed beings, what are referred to as the sons of God, over these regions. And two of these regions we learn about in Daniel 10, the prince or the supernatural being over Persia and Greece, the supernatural being that's placed over Greece. And so there are these regions with these beings. And then there's, of course, the land of Magog. And we know who that prince is. His name is Gog. It actually gives his name. And he's going to bring together a coalition. And he's going to lead this coalition into the Middle East. And God is against Gog. Behold, I am against you, O Gog. I will turn you around and I will put hooks into your jaw. In other words, he doesn't want to come down, but God is going to force him to come down. Hooks are going to be put into his jaws, and he will be pulled much like they would do the oxen that were stubborn. They put hooks in their jaws to get, or a ring in the nose and twist it to get the oxen to move. Lead you out with all your army. And then this group will be made up of Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya. Of course, Persia being the first in the group, that's the ancient name for modern-day Iran. In fact, Persia was still called Persia until the start of the 20th century. It wasn't until the 1930s that the name was changed from Persia to Iran. In fact, many of the people there in Iran today still refer to themselves as Persians. And then there's Ethiopia and Libya, which deals primarily with North Africa. And then Gomer and all its troops and the house of Togarma. And we know Togarma, of course, is connected to Turkey. But the warning is this, prepare yourself, addressing Gog, the leader of this coalition, prepare yourself and be ready, you and all your companies that are gathered about you, and be a guard for them. And then here it is, in the latter years, you, Gog, will come into the land of those, once again the Jews, we've read this already, brought back. The Israel was dispersed 2,000 years ago, and now they were brought back into the land, who've been brought back and gathered from many people. Where? On the mountains of Israel. There, that's where this is going to take place. Now, let's discuss the significance of Iran's 2015 nuclear agreement, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. Now, this agreement that was made in 2015, there's Iran, if you can see it on the map. I hope you can see that okay. Can you see that? And you'll notice those little circles, yellow circles with the black Y in them. those are different nuclear sites located in Iran. And Iran agreed to a set of conditions with the JCPOA for limiting its ability to develop nuclear weapons in exchange for the lifting of economic sanctions. So by entering into this agreement, six nations, Great Britain, France, China, Russia, Iran, and one other I forget, United States, six entered into this agreement. And the agreement was that if you do not develop nuclear weapons, then we will lift the sanctions against you. Now, one of those facilities that we're interested in today is called Fordo. Can you see that? Maybe not, but it's Fordo. That's the name of it. It's in the province, it's in the region, the state of Qom. And I want to show it to you on a satellite image there. That's a satellite image of where this takes place. And Iran has at the Fordo facility an underground, a vast underground complex of caves and where they enrich uranium. And this agreement forbids them to enrich uranium for 15 years. And there's disagreement as to what that is, but we don't care about the time frame so much. Donald Trump claims there's only 7 years left before they can break out with just a nuclear weapon within a couple of weeks, few weeks. But on April 30th, Israel unveiled evidence that proves Iran is not keeping the agreement they made with the six major nations, including the United States. In January, now this is the story behind that. So Prime Minister Netanyahu comes out on Monday the 30th, and he unveils this secret plan of Iran. I'm going to get into how they got that in a moment. That they have been lying all along concerning the development of a nuclear weapon. Now, let's go back and trace how this all came about. In January of this past year, Israel's Mossad, which is the equivalent of our CIA, only a little bitter, Israel's Mossad stole 12 vaults of nuclear archives from Iran. 12 vaults of nuclear archives from Iran. It's amazing how this actually took place. Back in January, Mossad had their contacts, and some the story that I heard, there's a number of contacts in Iran, and obviously one of them knew where the Iranians hid these archives, which reveals everything about their nuclear weapons program. And so they put into action by bringing two big trucks to a warehouse that was totally, you would never guess that they would have stored their entire nuclear program in these 12 vaults in this warehouse. When you look at the warehouse, you go, whoa, that's not much of a warehouse. It's just an old building. You would never suspect it. Yet they brought two trucks up. They went in, took the 12 vaults, put them on the trucks, and then drove to Azerbaijan in the north. Once they got into Azerbaijan, they caught a boat across a body of water to another unspecified country. And from that country, they flew to Tel Aviv with the 12 vaults filled with the archives of the nuclear program. Iran was so upset about this theft that they sent a drone into Israel on February 10th, perhaps you remember. And Israel shot the drone down. And then a little while later, it was announced that the drone Israel shot down that penetrated Israeli airspace was actually armed. And if you looked in this photo here, I don't know if you can see it, but the Israelis are wearing hazmat suits because they're not sure if they were chemical weapons. Now, that was February 10th that the drone was shot down. Then on March, now remember, Israel had captured these 12 vaults, took them to Tel Aviv, opened them, and have been examining them during the entire month of February. And then on March 5th, Netanyahu came to the United States and he presented President Trump Israel's findings about this archive that they stole from Iran. We learn that a senior Israeli official said Prime Minister Netanyahu had informed Trump on March 5th meeting about the alleged evidence seized by Israel and what Netanyahu presented this past Monday, presented as a great intelligence achievement. And so Netanyahu exposed Iran's nuclear ambitions in a speech. Did anybody see the speech? It lasted about 20 minutes. And key to his announcement on April 30th, Netanyahu told the world that Israeli intelligence was able to smuggle 55,000 files and 183 CDs, about a half a ton of material from Iran that proved beyond a reasonable doubt that despite Iran's repeated denials, the country has always sought to develop nuclear weapons and never strayed from that goal, even after the nuclear deal was forged. And so here is I can't see it very well, but could we turn off the lights on the stage, Charles, please? Maybe that'll help. Does that help? Yeah. You can see the notebooks are all in Farsi, which is the Persian language. And then you see the CDs, 183 of them. And they discovered that the name of the program is called Project Ahmad. Now, President Netanyahu presented it in this context, that the Iranian nuclear weapons program, they lied about it all along. They lied about it. They said they had no nuclear program, and now they have all the information to prove that they do have a nuclear weapons program. In fact, it goes so far as to, they had evidence in these files showing that they were ready to build 5 nuclear bombs to fit on a ballistic missile. That was one of the big pieces of his announcement that he made, Prime Minister Netanyahu made. But he also withheld information, sort of like the coup de grace back. He hasn't revealed the real kicker that the Europeans are finding out about this past week. They're now finding out about it this past week. They have the information. President Trump was the first to hear about it back on March 5th. And you'll notice, I don't know if you've noticed his rhetoric, very negative towards Iran, because he knows something you and I don't know. We know a little bit, but we know the tip of the iceberg, but there's a lot more that I think we will find out as we move forward. Now, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but Israel's been sending jets over into Syria. Right after they sent the drone in February, Israel shot the drone down. And then they sent jets into Syria and they took out the airfield that sent the drone and the building where the drone apparently was held. apparently filled with other drones, but they destroyed the building. And then just last weekend, April 29th, we read, and this is NBC News, so I'm not sure how accurate it is, but that's a joke. An Israeli airstrike on the western Syrian city of Hama on Sunday, April 29th, killed 24 Iranian soldiers and targeted arms and recently delivered from Iran, said three U.S. officials. And it is the latest sign that Israel and Iran are moving closer to open warfare. It has been reported that some 200 missiles were destroyed by this strike last weekend. So, and Iranians, 24, it's now been confirmed, 18 of the 24, 18 were Iranian military that were killed in this strike. Now, Iran isn't going to respond right away. Why? Because of the May 12th recertification date. They're not going to do anything stupid between now and May 12th, see, to give Donald Trump a reason to cancel out and pull out. They want to make Donald Trump, President Trump, look bad as much as possible. And so I've also read articles that they are extremely terrified about the accomplishments by Mossad coming in and being able, right under their noses, right outside of Tehran, their capital, go in with two trucks and take these highly prized vaults filled with all of this information that they're still going through. And so the Iranians are terrified, and they were upset, obviously, about what has taken place. There are those who say that the Iranians are actually building an army right now in Syria. Just recently at the UN, Danny Danon, the Israeli ambassador to the UN, he showed a map claiming that there is an area in Iran just 5 miles from Damascus with 80,000, that's 80,000, 80,000 Shiite fighters that the Iranians are training. And this is according to Israel. This shows you how close we are to what's going on concerning Ezekiel 38 and 39. Not saying that Ezekiel 38 and 39 are going to happen tomorrow. I doubt it. Not going to happen really anytime soon. More than likely, what will take place is that the Iranians will use their proxies to attack Israel. The Hezbollah, which is a Palestinian terrorist group located in Lebanon, and they are a proxy for the Iranians, a tentacle into that region. They use Hezbollah, a fighting machine, very powerful, and they've now been battle hardened with the recent war in Syria that's still going on. And so they could very easily use Hezbollah or Hamas in the Gaza Strip. And Hamas has been stirring up the Gaza Strip anyway. And all of this, by the way, I don't know if you've noticed, but all of this has been taking place since this faux pas in late January in Iran. All of this activity has been going on. Most Americans don't really know what's happening. Tonight you're learning about it right now. Now, Israel claims that it is next to impossible to verify Iran's nuclear sites. The IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, has been assigned to go in and check nuclear sites in Iran to see if there's any kind of clandestine activity going on, but they have to wait 2 weeks before they can go. They have to give a 2-week notice. Can you imagine? It'd be like an auditor giving you a 2-week notice. Hey, I'm going to come down and audit your business. I'm giving you a 2-week notice. And that's how it works. And yet we call it it's very tight and very tough and we're very hard. How on earth can you verify when they use deception and that they're experts at disguise? And so Israel claims it's impossible really to you know how Ronald Reagan, he used to say, trust but verify, right? And so that's what the Secretary of State, John Kerry, would say, well, we'll do that. We'll trust but verify. Well, the problem is you've got a cheater. And that's what Israel's point is. They've exposed these liars and they're lying to you. How can you trust them? You give them a 2-week advance notice before you give them a surprise notice? And you got to wait 2 weeks. Come on. Since January 2018, there's been unusual activity taking place at the Fordo nuclear plant in Qom. And I showed you that a little earlier. So we've got Fordo, which is located over here. That's a satellite image of Fordo. Here's another picture. Now the question, this is a further out. This is a satellite image. I don't know if you can see that. It was really clear at the men's prayer breakfast. But the question is, does Iran plan to reactivate the uranium enrichment plant in preparation for May 12? Are they planning to do that? Israel claims that... Now what it means is, if Donald Trump, he doesn't recertify the agreement, then they're going to reactivate the plant. And it looks as though they're already getting ready to do that from the satellite images. Let's look at this region. I'm going to zero in, actually not that region. That's where the actual uranium enrichment process takes place. But we're going to look at this region over here to the upper left. And I'm going to do a little blow up of that region. There we go. Now, this is Fordo. I don't know if you can see that, but look closely just to the right of that white rectangular structure. This was taken in July of 2016. And the ISI claims that they have not detected any large presence of private vehicles nor buses in recent months until April 29th. That was just last week. What happened on April 29th? April 29th, that's the same picture. That area right in there, is over here. Do you see those cars? There's four buses in the top triangle. In the parallelogram, there are a large number of vehicles there. And so this satellite image indicates unusual activity at the Iran nuclear site, Fordo, where they enrich uranium. Now, is Iran one of two things? Are they going there quickly to hide something? Or are they... in case there's an unannounced inspection with all of this information that's coming out from Israel? Or are they actually anticipating the cancellation of the recertification? We don't know for sure. Here's another one. This is Fordo. This is before. This is July of 2016. And this is after. See the new construction of the new buildings on the right side? Before, that was 2016. It was evacuated according to the agreement. And then this is as of April 29th, 2018. That region in the red pink area, that's all new construction that's been going on. This is the administration area, and that's for research and development. So they've been busy. They've been busy in their preparation. Now, the end of days is here, and even the Jewish rabbis are saying it's here. In fact, this article here, the end of days rabbi in Iran, things are about to get biblical, as he declares. Rabbi Winston told Breaking Israel News, some people thought the Bible was dead. They thought they could sit back and relax. That is clearly not the case in Syria, and soon that will be clear to everyone. And of course, here he's referring to Ezekiel 38 and 39. Now, I want to go back to the land of Magog for a moment and talk about that. Where is the land of Magog on a map? It's to the uttermost north of Israel. Do that again. Now, this is a migration of the Genesis 10 nations. You can go back to Genesis 10 and read about Magog, Meshach, Tubal, Togarma, grandson, and Gomer. They move to the north. The land of Magog is located to the uttermost north. Very important, because there are books out there today that say that Turkey is to the uttermost north, and they do a great spin. But just read the text. It's very clear. The text is very clear. The word for uttermost, the word for far in Hebrews is uttermost, as far north as you can go. So if you look at Israel there in the yellow, that's little tiny Israel. If you go directly north, the furthest most north you go is the land of Russia. Go any more north of Russia, you're at the North Pole, right? And there's no nation there. Russia claims it for themselves. But notice also that Moscow is directly north of Jerusalem. Turkey is not to the uttermost north. Russia is to the uttermost north. So this is about Russia. Ezekiel 38, verse 15, then you, this is referring to Gog, of the land of Magog, you will come from your place out of the far, at the uttermost, farthest north, you and many peoples with you. Ezekiel 39, 1 and 2, once again referring to Gog, of the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. I will turn you around and lead you on and bring you up from the, there it is again, far north, that is the uttermost north, and bring you against the mountains of Israel. This is what is now being prepared for us as we watch the events unfold before our very eyes. We're seeing the beginnings of what will take place eventually. So what is Russia's motive for invading Israel? Ezekiel 38, 11 and 12 tells us about Russia. You, Gog, the leader of Russia, will say, I will go up against a land of unwalled villages to take plunder and to take booty. In other words, they're coming down to take the riches of that region. And Israel has recently come into great riches. Israel's Leviathan and Tamar gas fields are, the Leviathan gas fields considered one of the largest in the world under much of the Mediterranean Sea just above, and in fact overlaps in Cyprus and Lebanon, and trillions of cubic foot of gas, natural gas. And Israel will become an exporter of natural gas rather than an importer of that. So they come to take booty and plunder and riches and wealth. And in fact, those who will protest the invasion are known as Ezekiel 38:13 called Sheba, Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish and all their young lions will say to you, have you come, referring to Gog? Have you come to take plunder? Have you gathered your army to take booty, to carry away silver and gold, to take away livestock and goods, to take great plunder? And it's a rhetorical question. Is that why you're coming down to take great plunder, O Russia? Now, Russia's interest in the Middle East today is not so much about religion. It isn't about religion. It's about energy sources. It has more to do with Russia's failing economy, which is dependent on energy exports and the U.S. and Europe, isolating them economically, thus driving Russia closer ties with Iran and with Turkey. Russia and Turkey don't get along, but because of economics, they work together. And Russia has made a decision a long time ago to side with Iran in this whole big mess. And in fact, now there are a number of nations that are attempting to get away from the dollar as the primary currency there to use in trade. The International Monetary Fund is based on the dollar, and they're moving away from that and turning to the euro instead, of course, seeking to punish the United States. But Russia is really poor, and we know that 65 to 70% of the Russian economy depends upon oil and gas exports. That's very clear. And we see, when you look at their gas pipelines or oil pipelines, most of their pipelines go there into Eastern Europe. And Turkey are dependent on Russian oil and natural gas. In fact, Turkey is the second largest importer of Russian natural gas. Now, why is this important? Because what happens if President Trump doesn't recertify the nuclear program, the agreement? What if he doesn't certify the agreement? What happens? The sanctions are re-implemented. What does that do to Iran and Russia? It's going to hurt their economy. Russia's going to be hurt, right? Because they depend on Iran. And Iran is going to be hurt. And this is what we don't know. What will Russia do if these sanctions are put back in? How will Russia respond? Because it's Vladimir Putin is just being now reelected to a, if you want to call it an election, he's just being made for a sixth term, I think it is, president of Russia, and it'll be a six-year term, something like that. 20 years as their leader. He's a dictator, come on. And so that's happening now. Well, that'll be done. He'll end up being their leader. But you see, he's only going to be as popular as the economy is stable in Russia. If the economy becomes unstable, then he becomes unstable as a leader. You see that? So what Donald Trump could do is he could make the whole region unstable by not recertifying the agreement. That's what's going on right now. May 12th is the big date, is when that will happen. Now, according to Reuters, Russia and Iran signed an oil for goods trade agreement last May 2017, a year ago. So they've already entered into this deal. There is this very close connection. And Iran is selling crude to Russia in exchange for products and so on and so forth. So we know. Now, I'm going to sort of wrap this up. So in light of the current prophetic fulfillment that we are watching before our very eyes take place, not saying that Russia is going to invade Israel tomorrow, Russia, Iran, and Turkey. Probably not. Probably not. Like I said earlier, more than likely they will use their proxies, Hezbollah in the north of Israel, to shoot missiles, Hamas to punish Israel a little bit for what Israel did last January. But they're not going to do it before May 12th. They're going to lie low until after May 12th, and then we're going to see something happen, especially with Israel's 70th year celebration coming up. They're not just going to sit idly by and let that go on without responding to it. So we'll probably see some kind of conflict between now and the end of the year between Iran and Israel, more than likely. What should we as believers do in light of these events that are taking place? Matthew 24, verse 14 tells us, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached into all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. Do you want to be part of that? Do you want to be part of preaching the gospel of the kingdom? We're not talking about John 3:16, although you got to do that too. They got to get saved first, right? But then you got to tell them about the coming kingdom, just like Jesus did the first time, remember? Jesus, the first time he came and he told Israel about the kingdom, and they rejected him. They rejected the king. So the kingdom was put on hold. Jesus, the disciples asked Jesus in Matthew 24, what will be the sign of the end of the age? Jesus gives them a whole list of things, and then he says, and then this gospel of the kingdom that we've been trying to get Israel to take, this gospel of the kingdom that the prophets of the Old Testament wrote about, that the majority of the church rejects. They don't accept what the prophets have foretold in the past, those prophecies that have not been fulfilled. The church says, well, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. Why is it irrelevant? Because Jesus is the fulfillment of all prophecy, they argue. He's the embodiment of all. So those prophecies in the Old Testament that we don't understand, oh, don't worry about it. It doesn't matter anyway. Don't bother reading the Old Testament. Let's just read, in fact, read the New Testament and, in fact, just the words in the print in red. Read that if you really want to be a good Christian. And this is what the church is teaching. I'm not talking about our church. I'm talking about the church in general. Now, in Matthew 24:14, Jesus said, this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations. I used to think that that was a reference to Revelation chapter 14, 6 and 7, when an angel flies around the world preaching the everlasting gospel to those who dwell in the earth. I always thought that that was the fulfillment. It says here in Revelation 14, 6, then I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, having, notice, the everlasting gospel to preach to those who dwell on the earth, to every nation, tribe, tongue, and people. And then read the rest of it. Verse 7, saying with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment has come. Which gospel is this one? This is bad news here, by the way, for the earth dwellers. Because what he's saying is that the gospel actually has, it's one coin with two sides. On one side, you have the good news of salvation. On the other side, you have the bad news of judgment. Look at these verses. What does it say in verse 7? The hour of his judgment has come. What this angel is doing is he's warning those who take the mark that if they take the mark of the beast, your judgment is sealed. The everlasting gospel. You see, the angel is preaching the everlasting gospel to those who might take the mark. And if they do, it's eternal hell, lake of fire, forever. This is not to be confused with Matthew 24:14. Matthew 24:14 takes place before this. The gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations. The gospel, the good news of what? The good news of the kingdom. See that? The good news of the kingdom. The kingdom, the Old Testament prophet said, is going to be a good thing. It's going to be a great thing. Preach it. Let them know it's coming. Be excited. Good news of the kingdom. Preach it. The angel is not doing that. This angel in Revelation 14 is coming out and he's saying, hey, I've got news for you. It's judgment if you take the mark. That's the point of Revelation 14. So we are called to preach the good news of the kingdom to an unbelieving world that they may know God is who he claims to be. And what is that? God is sovereign and in control. That's what we're to preach. You're to preach, and I'm to preach, that God is sovereign and He's in control. And that you may know that. I want you to know that God's in control. I want you to know that. We see this in Ezekiel 38:16. You will come up against my people, Gog, Israel, like a land, like a cloud to cover the land. It will be in the latter days that I may bring you against my land, so that the nations may know me. That's why God is bringing Gog into the land, that he may destroy them, so that what may happen? That the nations may know me. Now, how are they going to know him unless we tell them about these events before they happen? Right? And the church isn't doing that. The church isn't letting the world know, hey, look, Russia is going to come down with Iran and Turkey, and they're going to invade the land. They're going to be destroyed. How are the nations going to know unless we tell them? Preach the good news of the kingdom. Let them know. Let your family members know. Let your friends know. Tell them. What about John 3:16? Of course, John 3:16. Of course. Right? Not saying don't preach that. You got to preach that to get them saved. But we also got to tell them. Just like Jesus when he came to Israel. He told the whole nation, look at the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And did they accept it? They didn't. But he told them anyway. And that's what we're to do. We're to do just what Jesus did with Israel. We're to tell the nations. So the nations may know me when I'm hallowed in you, O Gog, before their eyes. Verse 23 of Ezekiel 38, thus I will magnify myself and sanctify myself, and I will be known in the eyes of many nations. Once again, unless they know these prophecies, how can they know that it was him? So we do what? We point back to the scriptures. We go out and we tell them, look at Ezekiel 38. Look what it says about these nations and who they are, and explain to them what's going on. And the Bible told us 2,600 years ago this is going to happen, and it's happening. And so when it does happen, what will happen? Many will say, wow, it's true. That they may know me, God says, Ezekiel 39:6, and I will send fire in Magog. That's Russia. And on those who live in security in the coastlands, then they shall know that I am the Lord. There it is again. They shall know I am the Lord. Verse 7, so I will make my holy name known in the midst of my people Israel. Israel will actually come into a knowledge of who Jesus is. I believe at this point, when Russia is destroyed by the hand of God, let's keep reading, and I will not let them profane my holy name anymore. What's God's holy name? How about Yeshua? Jesus. That's his name. Yeshua. Yehoshua. And they will not profane, I will not let them profane my holy name. They will, at this point, I believe, when Russia invades Israel, and then Russia, Iran, and Turkey are destroyed, and Sudan and Libya are destroyed. It's going to change the people of Israel, and it will start. It'll start a major shift in Israel toward the people calling out to Jesus as their Messiah. By the end of the tribulation, they'll be calling out to Jesus, the nation as a whole. Two-thirds of them are going to die. But that last third, they're going to be calling out to Jesus. And they're going to get saved. Then the nation shall know that I am the Lord, it finishes up there in verse 7, the Holy One in Israel. We are called to be a watchman. Ezekiel 33:6, but if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet to warn the people, I will hold the watchman accountable. That's you and me. Doesn't mean that we're not going to be saved. This is not a salvation passage. Aren't you glad? If you don't do it, you're going to miss out. You're going to end up feeling ashamed. Yeah. You don't want to feel ashamed. Remember, Jesus went after the two disciples on the road to Emmaus? He called them foolish and slow of heart to believe. Would you like Jesus to say that to you? Look, you're foolish. You're slow. Why didn't? How would you like Jesus to tell you that? He did. He told the disciples, right to their face. Why did you doubt? Don't you want, when you see Jesus, don't you want to say, hey, I believed your word. Your word is right on, and you give glory to God and you give glory to Him because of His word, not because of your great intelligence. Forget about that. It's not about your great intelligence. Give me a break. We're all bozos in the same bus, are we not? Really? It's all about His word. We believe His word. It's infallible. It's inerrant. The text makes it clear. All you have to do is study a little bit of the history and the patterns of migration, and it all makes sense. Remember the prophet's words and watch. Luke 21:34, but take heed to yourselves, Jesus says, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and the cares of this life. And that day come on you unexpectedly. I want to just say something real quickly about that, about the cares of this life. You know, the church is into psychologizing the faith. The church is into trying to figure out how to unravel all our problems. And you hear these pastors get up and they soothe you. They're like a psychologist, and they get up and they say, and it becomes more of a, people come in and say, I need, like, what about Bob? What about Bob? What about Bob with Bill Murray? I need, please help me. I need to be, okay, of course, yeah. The Lord will minister. He will. He'll minister to your needs, and He will help you, and He will help you with that area that you only know in part, right? But the fact is, we're only going to know in part. We're going to always know in part until we see the perfect, until He comes. You're only going to know in part. You're going to have psychological problems, in other words, right? So if we're going to have psychological, you don't go to church. You see, you don't make that your primary goal, to straighten out your psychological problems. That comes as you get to know Jesus, as you get to know Him in His word, as you study His word and understand what His word tells you. Hey, yeah, you're all messed up. And you know what? God says, I want you to know me, because I'm going to straighten it out for you as you trust me. Put your confidence in me. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything through prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, make your requests known to God, and then the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your heart and your mind. Of course! Isn't that what you want? I want that. Of course I do. But then God also wants you to know about His plans, and He wants you to be acted in His plans. We're to make disciples. How? Tell them, the kingdom's coming. It's coming. Preach the good news. But you see, this day is going to come unexpectedly, for it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. If you're all wrapped up in the cares of this life, it's going to come unexpectedly. Cares of this life. Trying to straighten everybody out around me so they can get along with me. What are we doing? Why are we doing that? Why aren't we just getting to know the Lord? Get to know Him. He wants you to know Him. And He says, look, just believe me. I'm going to take care of those things for you. Just start thanking me. But you know what we tend to do? We tend to, oh yeah, okay, I heard that, and then we go in back into our whining, complaining about the people that we hang out with, wondering what's wrong with them, when the problem is with me. You see, this day is going to catch those folks unexpectedly. It'll come upon them as a snare, and all those who dwell on the whole face of the whole earth. Watch, therefore, and pray always. Watch, therefore, and pray. In other words, be alert. Watch and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man. I love the way Hebrews puts it. The Amplified Version says this, that Christ, when He comes a second time, and when He comes that second time, which is just around the corner, He's not coming to carry any burden or sin, nor to deal with sin, but to bring to full salvation those who are eagerly, constantly, and patiently waiting for and expecting Him. That's why He's coming to take his own, to be with him, to be with him where he is. And he's going to take with those, he's going to take with him those who are eagerly, constantly, and patiently waiting for and expecting him. Is that where you want to be? I hope that's why you're here tonight. You're wanting to learn about this and then go tell others about it. Tell others about the coming kingdom. And it's not going to be popular today. I'm sorry, but do it anyway. Okay, just be faithful. Tell them anyway. And then let the Lord bless it. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's stand. I just, in my own family, I've noticed that it's not popular to talk about the second coming so much. Like it used to be. It used to be where it was an exciting, a lot of discussion, and it seems like we've sort of gotten away from that. And I really can't put my finger on exactly what it is, why that is. But I'm just have made it steadfast in my heart to continue to talk about his second coming, even though it may not be popular in my own family. And you know, well, there he goes again, talking about Jesus coming back, you know. And of course, we know he's coming back, but it may not be. And I've been told by one family member it may not be for another 100 years. So why are you so, you know, don't we have more important things to deal with? I'm thinking, oh my gosh, can you imagine? I had a family member back in the 80s. She told me, well, I don't really want the rapture to happen now because I want to have a baby and a swimming pool. And I'm thinking, how do you answer that? What do you say about that? Isn't Jesus more important to you than anything? And in this life, you want to make it about this life? No, thank you. But we'll make it about Jesus, right? Don't let them convince you that he's not going to come back for another 100 years. That's baloney sauce. He's coming back soon, guys. And be excited about it in Jesus' name. Amen.